It's so nice to sit together for, as I named before, and to somewhat state the obvious, these are some really incredible times here in the States, and the impact globally that what's happening here is happening abroad. And last week we shared together about the first noble truth, that the nature of suffering. And I want to stay on that trajectory and sort of moving through the noble truths and then exploring the Eightfold Path. So I want to talk some about the nature of craving, the desire for things to be different, to be otherwise. And then at the latter part of my talk, to drop into a little bit of resourcing an equanimity practice. And Levi and I were sharing before class, and my naming, given what happened in the Capitol last Wednesday and not knowing what will happen between now and the inauguration on the 20th, I can definitely move into a place of being scared. And sort of how do we ground ourselves and have a sense of coming back into a place of resource? So that'll be the latter part of this talk. And hopefully it won't feel too disjointed. So the second noble truth, there's a reason that we suffer. And this reason the Buddha offered is based in craving. The word in Pali, I think it's Pali, not Tibetan, but it is tangha, which translates as thirst, this need for something. And that craving, clinging, holding on to, it's so important for us to understand what motivates us. It's not that desire is bad. It's being able to slow down enough to understand, well, what's the motivation for this thing that I want? And I want to share an example that's somewhat embarrassing. But when I was just starting to sit retreats, I was sitting at this gorgeous retreat center in the mountains of near Santa Cruz called Vajrapani. And if anyone's been there, it's camping, it's beautiful. And then they have the area for meals. And it was early on in the retreat, I think the first or second day, and it was early morning, and I wanted a cup of tea and walked into the kitchen, and there were a bunch of people standing around. And I was new enough to the practice, I didn't quite understand the culture, clearly. Everyone was standing around. I just walked in, like got a cup of tea, and then went and stood with everybody else, not aware, unaware, oblivious to the fact that everyone was standing around waiting for the cooks to bless the morning and to welcome people to help themselves. And even as I say it now, sort of the mortification comes up of like, oh my God, total bull in a china shop, oblivious. But it was that I want a cup of tea, that craving, the desire led the action. It was a great teaching. I haven't done that since on retreat. I've paid a little more attention. But that way in which we can get caught up, a thought comes, I want X, and then we're there. We're getting it. And with Amazon, it can be this, I want this thing. Go on Amazon, click, click, and then the next day it's here. I mean, it's a very odd world in which we live when we allow those thoughts, I want X, to govern. And we really at times need to work hard to say, like, hey, slow down. This is just a desire. This is just a craving. And craving can sometimes come from a distraction. This is boring or hard or painful. I want this. I want to move out of this experience into some kind of sense pleasure, which is one of the first areas of this experience of tangha, of craving. And it can be like, I'm cold, I want to be warmer, I'm hot, I want to be cooler, or something soft, you know, something delicious, something that smells nice, something that looks beautiful. These can be the craving for sense pleasures. When it's that I want, in with the idea of if I get it, then I will have a sense of gratification. I get it. Oh, great. I got it. Gratification and contentment are not the same. That we can have a desire, we gratify it. And at some point after that desire is gratified, it's like, now I want something else. And this continual dissatisfaction that it's sort of wired into us to have this sense. This is the first noble truth, the sense we are always going to, there can be the steady stream of unhappiness, of dissatisfaction, of wanting something to be otherwise. So this craving for sense pleasure, I want to eat this, I want to drink this, I want to da 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 da. Again, not that it's bad. It's not the object itself. I want the piece of chocolate. It's the chocolate's not bad. It's just noticing what's the movement inside. What's the motivation for the grasp? And being able to play around in the subtleties of what's the motivation can really allow us some freedom, because that's really what we can have control of just noticing and the slowing down to be like, wait, what's my intention here? When this is from Joseph, this primal energy of thirst and tanha. It's a primal energy that is the opposite of peace. And I like the pairing for consideration, this notion of gratification and contentment, that we know we get gratified and then we want something else. And that this means of craving, of wanting, of thirst, we can, when that becomes a habit, then our actions follow that. So we can, by allowing the thought of I want, the action then comes up behind it to say, okay, let's get it. And then that patterning of I want it, action. The thought comes, the action, the gratification, that itself becomes a habit and a self-fulfilling cycle of dissatisfaction, because the lie that somehow if I get that thing, that, and whether it's a thing or a job or a partner or a car or whatever, will have some sort of lasting happiness. And we know that it doesn't work that way. We live in the dominant culture that says, oh, it totally works that way. Absolutely works that way. That Tesla, that this, that, whatever, that's really going to be the ticket to your happiness. We can all point to advertisements. We say that this is the key. Okay. It's super seductive. And the teachings are, well, check it out. If you get that shiny object or that meal or that drink, is there a sense of lasting happiness? And that's really an important piece of these teachings. Like, check it out. Is it true? And the difference between that which is gratifying and that which supports a sense of contentment and ease, and how do we feel energetically into each of those places, and being able to, which actually feels better? Where do I have more sense of ease and peace? This line of what does the mind become enamored with, and what's that about? So it's really allowing ourselves to be curious, investigative. What's going on? What am I really wanting? A second quality of this craving is this craving to become. I become more powerful. I want more power, to become powerful. And we're seeing the danger, profound danger of this particular thirst playing out nationally here in the States. I want to hold on to power. Becoming also has this quality of projecting one's own self into the future. When COVID is over, when the pandemic is over, I'm going to go to where I'm going to do X, Y, and Z. I'm going to see this person. I'm going to go here. I'm going to do this. It's projecting myself into the future as if it will be better then. There's some hope that it will be. So just owning that, but sort of watching what can be this real seduction of, if I put myself in the future becoming this, then it'll be better. If I have this job or I do this or I do that in the future, I will be something else. So I'm way over here. And there's an offsetting in that line of the past is over. The future hasn't happened yet. In this now moment is the knowing. And that the future projection, I want to do this, I want to become this, I want my ideas to be well known, I want this, the craving for a way of becoming, a way of either being like a supersized version of ourselves or becoming something different. And there's that a delusion. And I think in the first area of craving, in the sense pleasure, there's a delusion in thinking, oh, if I get this, I'll be happy. And I've been thinking a lot about delusion of late, of the power of deluded thinking. And I'm using this in the Buddhist sense of what ails the humans on this planet are these forces of greed, hatred, and delusion. We don't need to look far to see the astonishing harm that comes when people are so caught in this vice grip of greed, hatred, and delusion, and we can see it out there and be like, oh my God, that's not me. Well, but how do I live in this place of delusion? Or what do I delude myself into thinking? I'm going to share another example. I don't know how embarrassing it is yet, but my daughter is in seventh grade and she needs to go to a different school next year. And I have a lot of ideas about what I think is best for her and did a lot of research and acting about my idea of what I felt was best, which remarkably did not line up with with her idea. But watching my own mind locking into, I didn't have this conversation with, but I could just watch in my own mind, like, no, this is right, I'm right. And it was like, what are you doing? Not only was it creating so much suffering in my own experience, because she wasn't on board, but it was creating stress for her and stress between the two of us. And this ability to relax of, maybe I'm not right. Maybe it needs to be otherwise. Okay. And the settling down that can come. So kind of watch. And that was, that too was this craving of becoming, her becoming something. The third quality of this craving is sort of not becoming. And the most dramatic example, the most extreme, would be suicide. But it doesn't need to be that. It's also aversion. It's a movement away. I don't want this. I don't want to be the angry, bossy helicopter mom. I don't want to be this. I don't want to be that. A movement away. But this too, that body language, that movement away, it pulls me off center. It pushes me off. And how can we allow for the thoughts will come. The desires will come. Okay. Can we sit back, put our energy like back in down and just watch? Okay, well, what do I need to, is this true? Is this more in the realm of deluded thinking? And the reason why I think that word tanha is helpful, that sense of thirst, because there's a different energetic quality to like, I want it, I'm right, versus a place of wisdom of, no, this is true. And being able to play energetically, noticing, well, how does this feel? What I'm holding onto, what I want to become, what I don't want, is there this kind of wonky energy that comes to it, or is it a sense of clarity? And this, the different, it's a subtlety, but it's a useful way to consider how we can liberate ourselves from suffering that might be optional. I just have some, this is a nice difference too, in terms of whether we can hold this in terms of our practice, what happens when we sit on the cushion, but also in life, the difference between aspirations and expectations. So I can take my seat in the morning and have the aspiration that I will be steady and calm and at ease. That's very different than having the expectation of me sitting down and having a mind that's super chill and at ease. If I have an expectation and I don't have that experience, I'm going to be upset and agitated and, you know, I can spin down that road. If I have the aspiration, it's like, okay, there's that guiding light. And in our lives to play too with what's the aspirational quality of how I want to show up in the world versus the expectation. And again, I think it's Philip Moffitt's line of expectation is the seed of resentment, and how to be careful, so careful with expectations we place upon ourselves and others. There's also, I think, I'm going to say this and then decide if I think it's true. There can be a craving quality of expectation. I need this. I want this. I want this to be true. Okay. It doesn't mean it's going to be thus. So how can we pay attention to the nuanced feel of what's a expectation of how I'm going to show up versus an aspiration. And again, feeling into which feels better. And then being able to give ourselves permission to lean into that which feels easier. I listened to this great talk. It's on YouTube from Ajahn Pasanu. And the title of it is The Mind is a Liar. How great is that? As a title. And his instruction is you watch the thinking mind and you point and you say liar, which I've been playing with, which is kind of fun because both it makes me laugh to do it. And then it's like, huh, what if that's true? So that's an invitation to play with that. From his talk, in this ability to watch the thinking mind, is a fundamental recognition of what's there. We're noticing, like, oh, this is what these thoughts are. We can feel into the energy. There's like, oh, what's going to happen? Energy or steadiness. Stillness doesn't mean stopping the thoughts or stopping the feelings. The stillness that gets spoken about, of embodying a sense of stillness, he's saying it's just the ability to not be shaken by our thoughts or feelings. So in our response last Wednesday to the events of what happened in the Capitol, there were a lot of feelings that came up and a lot of thoughts, and how to be able to watch again the power of, oh wow, these are the feelings that come up, these are the thoughts that come up, and I can have all that, the cacophony can come, but there is a part of me, hopefully at times, that can still stay steady and be like, wow, this is a lot. And again, that ability, the flexing that muscle of awareness that then prevents us from getting all spun out into what's happening. I'm going to come back to that. There's just a few other lines that I think are so great. How do we have, we learn to trust and have faith in our capacity to simply pay attention. And understanding what is trustworthy. Our habit is to rely on our thought process. We are trained in this form from very young. Our education system is all about that. What do you think? And he says, quote, thought is pathetically unstable. Thought is pathetically unstable. We cannot rely upon it. Right? It's like, it's kind of this real paradigm shift of the thinking mind is not always reliable, rarely is reliable. And it's pathetically unstable in the distinction between the thinking mind and wisdom. Wisdom is reliable. It's based on what is true. In this talk, he also answers the question, what is Dharma? Dharma is when everything is just right, when everything is just in balance. It is an anchor to how we relate to this human world. I find that so liberating, the sense of, okay, how to, as a pointing to how do we relate, particularly in times such as these, which we've been saying for how many years, but nevertheless, in these particular times where it's so challenging, can we rest in a knowing how we can choose to relate to our thoughts and our emotions? We can't necessarily choose our thoughts nor choose our emotions, but we can choose how we respond, how we react to them. And that's where the freedom is. And it to be able to allow ourselves to hold it as a moment-to-moment experience. In this moment, I can see pretty clearly that my mind is super spun out. And I'm going to stay here and not talk to anybody. Sit on my hands, as it were, and to kind of allow some sense of steadiness to come. Or not. Okay. Just some other nice lines, that our mind is normally organized around getting what I want or avoiding what I don't want. Our mind is normally organized around getting or pushing away. And again, just being able to see like, oh, that's the pattern. Do I want to do that? And if not, okay, what can I do differently? Can I just sit and allow myself to observe this pattern? Because again, we see the profound harm that can come when we are caught in this vice grip of greed, hatred, and delusion, the wanting, I must have. So okay, one more line. We learn how suffering is created. That's what this pointing is. What's happening here? How am I relating to my own mind? We learn how suffering is created, and if desire is what's driving us and moving us forward, does that feel helpful or skillful? And again, it's really about just slowing down. So I'm going to just take a few moments here to shift gears, if that's okay, and ask you to close your eyes and just to check in. How is your body? How is your nervous system? And again, in response to these events that are playing out nationally, it can be quite agitating to the system. This for many of us may have had the experience of an exchange with someone in power who was not held accountable for their actions. And there's a triggering for many of us that can be happening in response to what may or may not, how things may play out. Will someone be held accountable? Is yet another person going to get away with doing something harmful? And what does that bring up in us? And I'm saying that knowing there might be some that triggering response can come up. And I'm not saying that trying to trigger anyone, but just naming that is what might be happening. So then how can we soothe the body? And in SE, somatic experiencing, is a teaching of you take the right hand on the left shoulder. No, right hand under the left arm. And then the left hand on the right shoulder. And just breathe. So there are these pressure points that can help settle the nervous system. And just breathing in. So right arm under the left armpit. Left hand over the shoulder, if that makes sense. And just being able to breathe there. It's a holding of oneself, a meeting of oneself. And then just being able to drop into the sense of, I'm okay. In this moment, I'm okay. Feeling your body supported by the earth and dropping into the points of contact of your body in the cushion, the chair, the floor. So it's a resourcing in the body. And if the agitation in the mind is high, then what's your favorite place in the world? Where do you love to go? If it's in the redwood forest, on the beach, in the mountains, allow the mind to go there. Allow all the sense doors to open. How does it feel to be in this particular place? What are the sights, the sounds, the smells? Allow yourself to really transport yourself to this place that you love. Notice the body's response. Notice what happens to the nervous system. Is there a settling down? Maybe, maybe not. But being able to build in to our days this ability to resource ourselves, hand under the arm, hand on the shoulder. Where is that place that I love, that I can imagine being opening up to, where I feel safe and steady? And just another movements that can be helpful, a hand to the forehead, hand to the chest. Again, points, just being able to breathe into that, like, and to see what happens. Hand to the forehead, hand to the chest, and just breathing in to feel the perhaps warmth or coolness of your hands. And just breathing. Just taking a few moments to breathe. Again, allowing the attention to stay in the body, points of contact. It's helpful to bring in the connection to the earth elements, the steadying nature of a mountain, the rocks, the trees. I could keep going, but I want to stop to offer time for us to hear from each other. So I hope that was of some benefit. And then we'd just love to hear from you, either what came up or how you're doing. So thank you for your attention and staying with me through all that.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.